So, good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much. And it shines over it. So I can't see you. I can't see you, but I know you're out there. That's fine. It's okay. I'm happy the sun shines. So, we'll begin our two-hour session this morning. It's a bhakti yoga session. And bhakti yoga is is a type of yoga which can be practiced in different ways. One way is to withdraw and to be upon oneself. And in that section of bhakti yoga, we find practices like meditation, practices pranayama, and practices like mantra chanting, or sometimes or sometimes puja. And then there's another aspect of bhakti yoga, which is basically on the go. It's yoga in the middle of life, yoga in the city, yoga as a way of life. So I have not in any way tried to preconceive a presentation, because I felt that if I do that, I may not be in touch with you. Okay? I may give you a lecture that's nicely constructed and so on, but at the end, I don't know. I don't know what kind of people I'm dealing with. Whereas, not that I know that much now, but I'm seeing your faces, and that makes a difference. So, therefore, in a way, we are spontaneous. Next to me is my friend Emmanuel, who I think you met already, because I think he played last night. And he is an amazing flute player. Not only flute, he brought many other things as well. And so he will add a lot of ambience, and his presence is greatly appreciated. The session will be a meditative section, and we will start with just a little music to build up an atmosphere. And during that time, which may go for 10 minutes or so, during that time, if you're comfortable in sitting, fine. If you feel the body needs a stretch, please stretch, right, during the meditation. That's entirely up to you. The idea is that we tune in, relax, and that in that first 10 minutes, we make a connection. Emmanuel and myself will begin with some simple musical introductions. The sounds are meant to be somewhat meditative. It's morning. Morning is the time for sattva. Sattva, rajas, tamas, goodness, passion, and ignorance are the qualities that we find in nature. They change. Sometimes there's passion, sometimes goodness. These qualities, they exist within us and without us. And they're not always the same. For example, a beautiful lotus pond with a swan would be in goodness. If a person on the bank of that pond would be in goodness, then that person would feel greatly inspired in such a place and feel, such positive, rejuvenating energy. However, if a person would be in passion in the environment of goodness, looking at that swan in that pond, you would think, geez, what a boring place. Wonder if the thing can fly and throw a stone. So in this way, different moods can be within and without. The objective is to create goodness around us, which will nourish us and build up that same goodness within. Then we build up our inner strength, and that inner strength will carry us. And then even if we enter into situations that are of a different nature, not peaceful, we'll keep our inner peace. When passion moves, circumstances get overwhelming and it's exciting, but you also don't know where it's going to take you. Without passion, life is dry. Some passion is there, but we retain our inner strength, our inner roots in goodness. So please feel free to move as you like, as you know, as you used to. Oh, Thank you. Offering, basically, invoking auspiciousness. Because the circumstances, they differ. The modes of nature, goodness, passion, ignorance, they are coming on their own accord. Although in general, the morning is more in goodness, the middle of the day, more in passion, and the evening, more in ignorance. Still, some mornings, everything seems to be right and peaceful, and other days, already from the beginning, everything goes wrong. You know what I'm talking about? Happened to me yesterday. I was sneezing when I woke up and I blew my nose under the tap and my tongue slipped off and I scratched my nose like anything. I don't know how I did it. And it's like, here I am, my beauty destroyed. yeah, so what to do, that's the way it comes. Therefore, after our auspicious invocation, we begin with the foundation of our meditation. Basically, the key to reality is consciousness. I have a simple story, which is a boy who is in love with a girl and he comes with a bunch of roses, goes to her place and comes in the street. It's called Paradise Lane. He comes to her house and he rings the bell and music is playing. Ding dong, ding dong. She opens the door and goes,
"Roses! I'm allergic to roses."
And slams the door in his face. He turns around and there are Doberman pinchers barking and the name of the street has just changed into Hell's Gate. Same place.
You dash dogs go woof or do they do something else?
I don't know. You can go for one. Yes, so consciousness is the key. And we are absorbing everything is about consciousness. Therefore, in the morning, invoking auspiciousness. Our mangala charan, And after invoking auspiciousness, we need a foundation. Just in our meditation, we sit, possibly raised on a cushion so that our spine can easily be straightened. We find our balance, and we're connecting with the earth. At the same time, an appropriate mental attitude must be there. We must be grateful to the earth. The earth is our mother. The earth supplies us with so many needs. Our food, our water, a resting place. So there, in appreciation and respect, foundation, we must be anchored in honesty. It all begins with honesty. Where there's, no matter how good it looks, if it's not honest, then it's hollow. It's not filled. It's hollow. It may be impressive, and many people may like it, may praise it, may buy it, may go for it. One may have a fan club, but many Facebook friends. But how deep does it go without honesty in any relationship, in anything? Necessarily what matters. It's oftentimes the impression that you make that really counts. So we are looking at the foundation of honesty. Honesty in dealings. Honesty with ourselves. The Vedic literatures, which is the basis of my discussion, Veda means knowledge. And the Vedic literatures, when they speak of honesty, are pointing out that naturally everyone makes mistakes. Naturally, we all have limited senses. How can we see? How much can we hear? Illusion also plays a part. Sometimes we look at a distance and think there is someone we know, but it may not be the case. Whether it is bhakti yoga, whether it karma yoga, whether it is jnana yoga, without that foundation of honesty and humility, we cannot succeed. So we've laid the groundwork, as you see, just as you are seated on your mats. Rolled them out, you've laid the groundwork, so you can perform your asanas. And there's the interaction between the mind and the body. Just as the asanas are designed in such a way that gradually we get into flowing movements. Breath is flowing in, flowing out. Then the right mentality along with it. So I'm adding today maybe a bit of that perspective. I think for 1 week or whatever number of days you have performed many asanas. So I'm adding an element of the mood. So we make our foundation. Meditation has gone mainstream. Everyone's meditating. It's like, to some extent, we all have some idea how meditation is a means to empty the mind, free it from stress, and so on. And that's a fact, because in Vedic texts, it is said there's a description of the Visayi. And the Visayi are basically the things around us. And it says the mind enters into the Visayi. And the Visayi enter into the mind. Or, say it more simple, mind goes into the things go into the mind. Like that. Compulsive behavior. Where's my phone? First thing, wake up. Where is it? Sitting on the edge of the bed, scrolling the messages. They should make waterproof phones. So even under the showers, we can stay in touch with our beloved friends and so on. Not a moment without communication. Yes, it's important. Waterproof phones. iPhone 7. Waterproof. I'll put in my request. He's good, isn't he? So internally, mind and body working together, and so we must learn to withdraw. The morning is a time to withdraw. Actually, the morning, you begin the morning not straight away from like open your eyes and get into it. No, that's wrong. That's wrong. The morning is meant for first taking in positive energy. That's why you sit, you breathe, stretch, you do your exercise as part of getting the start of the day on the right footing. Not like, you know, just throw yourself in there and let it happen. No, no. Not like that. We don't throw ourselves in there. We go in a deliberate way, with deliberate, controlled movements. See? All these days, you have made controlled movements, not like this, not like that, not exactly right, the right angle, and so on. I'm also trying, early in the morning, with Iyengar's light on yoga, which of course is impossible for someone like, for an ordinary person like me, but as close as I can get. Because we need it. My body needs it. Today, after this session, super nice, I drive off to the airport and jump into a tin can to India with Malaysian Airlines, fingers crossed. should be around. And our minds have absorbed goodness. When we carry that with us, that will help. When I sit in that plane and all these, and this, everybody has a different movie and all these things and this terrible air, then I'm glad. I'm sure I'll be thinking, that was a nice start to the morning. Our foundation. First part, complete. So I spoke about all the things that are on our mind and we begin and disconnect ourselves from all these things, leave it behind. In that way, meditation is oftentimes equated with emptying the mind. That's what you generally... But that's only the first half. That's an incomplete... Meditation is only about emptying the mind, and it's not complete. The next part is putting positive elements in place. That's obviously there. All right, stress, meditation, stress relief, yoga, stress relief. That's all like, you know, okay, getting rid of a pain in the back, a pain in the neck, and, you know, and so on. That's good. We want to get rid of that, but now that we got rid of it all, are we going to do something positive? Something, you know, something exciting? Something nice. It's so relief from suffering is not enough. Right? That's only the preliminary. Basically, okay, throw the dirt out of your house. Right? Now it's all clean, spick and span. Now what are we going to do? We don't just clean the house for the sake of having a clean house. Some people, they have a fetish, you know, everything clean, it must be clean, if it's not clean. So they clean for the sake of cleaning. But other people, we clean the house for the sake of having a good time in the house. Right? That's why I'm cleaning my house. So we've begun the process of cleansing, the process of freeing ourselves from all those things that we carry with us in our consciousness, all those memories, all those things unnecessary, we let them go. We leave them in our meditation. And we go forward. So I will not spend much time on this freeing ourselves from these negative influences. I will go towards building the positive. The word sacred space is kind of a little cliché that you find it everywhere. But at the same time, who has implemented it in his life? Who lives in a sacred space? Actually, that's where we belong. That's the true domain. The true domain is a sacred space. And there we should reside. And so let us put good values. Okay? Good values. Which are desirable. Yeah. In our meditation, we're not yet in action in the world. We are now withdrawn. We are in a hall. We are in a valley. We're away from the place where we're normally active. Once we go out of here, once we leave this place, I guess you're also leaving today, then, get back into another world again and carry whatever we have assimilated with us, and that energy will remain for quite some time. And some things even may have brought about a lasting change in us, to an effect, something, maybe gained some new approach. That's what retreats do. So they're powerful. They give us something lasting and something permanent. So two levels we have covered a little bit. We have spoken about the level of physical well-being. We've spoken about mental well-being. And where is the spirit? Where is the soul? The soul is asleep. Deeply asleep. In this world. The soul is asleep. And in that dormant state, the mind takes over the functions of the soul. So, what is the difference between material and spiritual consciousness? So much has been said on the topic. What is the difference? Material means the consciousness, the thinking, feeling, and willing is happening on the level of the mind. But when it comes to the soul, and when the soul awakens, it goes to a deeper level. A level of well-being and a level of recognition. Just like fresh air, we recognize it, you know, immediately. Right? There's something about it. Nice. Fresh air. And it's a recognition between the air enters into our lungs and we actually feel the relationship we have. So, spirit then takes us to the deeper dimension, the dimension of eternity. Eternity. Without eternity, how can we ever empty the mind? We can't. How can we ever free ourselves from all these entanglements? they come back. Monday morning, back on the job. God, it's all been waiting for you. It's piling up on your desk. And you look in your mailbox and say, oh my God. Oh no. It's back. It's all back. Oh. We are but there is another dimension to life, an eternal dimension to life. How do you know? I guess the proof of the pudding is in the eating. Or judge by the result, say it in another way. Yeah? Judge by the result. It's like what brings peace of mind? The understanding of eternity is natural. Who wants to die? Who wants something to disappear? Who wants a relationship for a while? No. In the fairy tales, they always lived happily ever after. Nothing else. Right? So see, such things are natural and real. Eternity. So again, we'll sing a little. Thank you. Have you ever read this book of Hermann Hesse named Narcissus and Goldmund? You read it, huh?
Many years ago.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Not me too.
Probably 30 years ago.
Huh?
Probably 30 years ago.
30 years ago, huh? Yeah. 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 But it sort of, it made an impression on me. It was a book, it was an interesting book because there were two personalities. One was Narcissus and the other one was Goldmund. And Goldmund, he was a man of the world, but he was deeply spiritual at the same time. He was someone, and he had his love affairs and so on, but he was a decent guy. Ultimately, he wanted something good, and as a job, he was doing religious sculpture. He was a sculptor, and that was what he was doing, an artist, basically. And once I used to be like Goldmund. At that time, when I was reading the book, I was like Goldmund and sort of looking for something in life, but also very much in the thick of it. Later, things turned. The other party in the book was Narcissus, who was a friend of Goldmund. But Narcissus was more austere. Narcissus became a monk. And Narcissus really was going another spiritual path. But whatever, clearly both were going a spiritual path. That was clear. And the interesting thing about reading the book, I don't know if that happened to you, but what happened to me as I was reading the book, sometimes I identified with one of the personalities and then with the other. Hesse was such a good writer, you know, that like you just sort of get these two personalities and you realize actually they're two parts of me. And you're sort of thinking, yeah, no, I'm like this, and then you're reading the other person. No, I'm like Narcissus. No, I'm like Goldmund. And these days I may look more like Narcissus, but Goldmund's still there. Goldmund hasn't left. He never went for a moment. We can dress up in different costumes, but we remain. Deep down, we remain ourselves, no matter what you do. You can get a degree. And the more you study, the deeper you go. It's a transformational program. A program. If you basically go into a PhD program, it's not about learning anymore. It's about changing the way you think. Ouch. Changing the way you think. But it doesn't work. It's an artificial imposition of the mind. Because really, deep down, there is something in us that is ourself. And somehow or other, I always had a great interest in that. It's like the true self. I always had that conviction, and I still have it today, that deep down within us, there is something, a true self. And all the other things, the externals, that have been sort of are superimpositions on our mind. You know, what we learned, you know, etiquette, how to behave, how to speak, everything. The various tricks, me, how to do public speaking. I do public speaking every day. Yesterday, 3 lectures. But I never know where or in what kind of setting. And that's the exciting part. That it's always new and different. If it was the same, it wouldn't be real. I also did music for a while, still doing. And music for me was a meditation, and in music I did what already what I am formulating now, today. With music, I created a sacred space. And I could go in there. I could do that music and always kind of find some rejuvenation there, some new strength. Anytime. I could do it anywhere I was. I had it with me. It never left me, and it was something. And it helped me tremendous. I mean, every family goes through its, peaks and valleys and dips and so on. And boy, but in the deepest dips, it didn't touch me, because I had my music, which was sacred to me. As a musician, you can do different things, but I looked for something divine, something sacred in the music. So there it began. What I'm doing now, taking a sacred space and filling it with positive value, filling it first for myself, put some qualities. Yes, I turned to Vedic scriptures because I realized that I'm not unique, and it's not that I'm the first human being who ever lived on the planet. It's not that nobody else ever went through what I went through. Therefore, let me take advantage of the wisdom of the past. So I looked at the Vedas. The Vedas said, Sama tamastapo so chum tanti arjavam eva cha jnanam vijnanam asti kim brahma karma svabhavajam. It said, to be equipoised, dhammas, to be sense control, tapas, to be ready to deal with austerity. It's unavoidable. Whatever you want, you got to make an effort first. Result comes after sacrifice. But no matter what it was, what the goal is, whatever your goal is, whether it's, it all takes sacrifice. Our friend who went into Paradise Lane, carried roses. That was his sacrifice. See? So the power of sacrifice is a theme which is very important. So far we've discussed two topics. We began with the power of blessings, of bringing auspiciousness in, and in this way we gain strength. Now we move on to the power of sacrifice. Sacrifice melts hearts. It melts people. When somebody goes out of their way for you, what can you do? You can't ignore them. Not for long. For a while. But if they really go out of their way, how can we ignore someone who makes a sacrifice for us? So, sacrifice in this way is quite amazing. Sacrifice must be made. Just as I'm sure that the week that you had was austere also. Sounds good to me, but sounds austere also. A whole week of yoga. Super good and also intense. Intense focus. Whew. It's a workout, sort of like.
Mm-hmm.
The hall is nice, but sometimes we just want to run outside in the fields, just go to the beach, you know. Oh, yeah. It's not far. It's nice. Well, what to do, or just, you know, go sit in front of the TV and, you know, hang out. So, okay. But a sense of austerity, samu, tamas, tapas, tapas. Tapas is needed to achieve anything. No tapas, no austerity, no achievement. So cham, purity, cleanliness. Oh. It's like this hall is nice because it's clean, it's got a nice ambience. So cham. That's we need that. So we need to create order in chaos. Otherwise, sucham. Purity, yeah. No purity, then life goes to the dogs. Can we say? No, that's okay, you know, for some. But those are the lower modes. When we drink up all our money, or puff away on foolish cigarettes. I really like it that nowadays on airports they put people in glass boxes. I think it's really cool. And you look at it, looks ridiculous. God, how must it feel to go? I don't know, because I don't smoke. But what must it be like to go into this glass box and everyone can see you? That in itself is already terrible, right? You have to sit there in that box, ridiculous, puffing away while everyone's looking at you. It's like, oh my God, look at them. I think it's cool. I like that. Well, and what a foolish thing. Yeah. Half kill yourself. Maybe kill yourself completely. Spending so much money. On what? Yeah. Something stupid. So, cleanliness, purity, those things. Out. We leave outside our sacred space. In India, in temples, before you go in, shoes stay outside. Same in Asia. Shoes outside. No shoes inside a temple. Impure. Impurities outside. We leave our impurities out of our life. Out. Purity is our asset. All right, it doesn't always work. And we're not like, you know, I mean, even if we may put on the halo, the tail also sticks out of the back a little bit at the same time. So, but everything has a price, right? For sure. If you do something too long, too much, it has a price. They say you are what you eat. It's not only you are what you eat, you also are what you do. You also create. We create our own future. Future of the world, future of ourselves. We create our destiny. So, okay, you know, sometimes you have to just play around a bit, you know, and just say, oh, well, that's all right. But destiny is destiny. We, ultimately, what we do is what we will be. Then we go forward. Samodha, tapo, socham, ksantir, ksantir. Tolerance is unavoidable. There's always something, you know. I remember some of my first meditation attempts. I went to India. I started traveling when I was 17, overland from Amsterdam. A little bit by magic bus. Wasn't that magic? And then, I came into Istanbul. The meat was green. I go, okay. I became a vegetarian. Wasn't it? That was the most convincing argument I ever encountered for vegetarianism. Green. All right. But it stayed with me. I traveled further and further. I came to Kabul. I brought my guitar. I played a song. And then a beautiful girl, local Afghani girls, came and said, "Oh, I love your music. Can you play in our club?" I said, "Yeah, sure. Wow." Got a gig as well. Went to the club, was playing. She came and smiled at me and brought the tea, which is the local drink, and threw a lump of opium in that tea. And then smiled so sweetly that I didn't dare not to drink it. Idiot that I was. Oh, gosh. For a while, I was floating on cloud nine and possibly beyond. But then, it hit me bad. And for 1 week, the front door was open and the back door closed. That was intense. And I never ever wrote anything on the door of a toilet except that one time. And I wrote on that, "I don't want to be an opium plant." And I had enough. That was it. I said, finished with this. I traveled further over the Khyber Pass, where you can buy a tank and a bazooka if you want. And as I came to the other side, I traveled by bus, and people were smiling in my face and putting hands in my pockets and trying to take my money. "Go away." And they put it again. "Go." They wanted bribes at the border. Then, when I came to the border of India, there was a man with a big turban on and a mustache, enormous. I think he put cold things at night. And he said, "Why have you come to India?" I said, I'm 17. I said, "Well, I heard that India is a very spiritual country." He said, "Oh, very good. You must go to Benares." I said, yes, because you don't argue with a guy at the border. He said, yes, you will go, because I will buy you the ticket. Oh, what a country. You come in the country and they buy you the ticket. Cool place. I was ready. On that train, boy, was it packed. People on the seats, people in the luggage rack, people everywhere. But the amazing thing was, all these people were into spiritual things. There was a Sikh in the luggage rack chanting, "Ram, Ram, 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 Ram." 1 hour, "Ram, Ram, Ram." 2 hours, "Ram, Ram, Ram." 3 hours. That's amazing. Where am I? Muslims were bowing down as time moved along, because they bow down 5 times a day. It was a long journey. A wife was serving her husband with great devotion. It was shocking to me. I mean, I didn't say it wasn't like that at home, It's overwhelming. This training was something else. One man came to me and said, "Son, everything is in God's hands." Where I was from, in Amsterdam, God, you know, we don't talk about that. It's all right if you want to be religious, but keep it to yourself, okay? Do us a favor, you know? I mean, the G-O-D phenomenon, give us a break, you know, don't talk about it in public, okay? And here on this train, everyone seemed to be into that. One old man said, "Son, everything is in God's hands." And I was thinking, am I on the right train? I mean, maybe this one goes to heaven. You know? I mean, you know. So it was quite an experience. I came to Benares, I stayed, moved to a hotel, stayed in the street, and what did I see? A very colorful street scene and so on, and I was looking. Next morning, I come out of the hotel. There's a dead body lying in the street. Oh my God. That man is dead. Then I stared, you know. I mean, I'd never seen it. Never seen anything like that. Then people walked past and they all threw coins on the body. Meanwhile, I recognized that man, a beggar. I'd seen him the day before. And they, in about 10, 15 minutes, the whole body was covered in coins. I was shocked and staring. And then, I just thought, what's going on? What on earth are these people doing? They're burying him in money, a beggar. I said, that's ironical. I mean, whole day he didn't have nothing, whole life died of poverty and they're burying him with money. I said, what's going on here? I asked somebody and then they said, oh, when a person dies, the soul goes out of the body and that person cannot go back inside. Everyone is saying, oh, he's dead, he's gone. You say, no, I'm here. But no one hears. Tries to enter, but he cannot. Fearful. Now what? Where am I going? It's like trying to get back in anxiety. They said, then, to help that person go further on his destiny, the body must be burned. So that he gives up trying. And that he actually is ready to move on to the next destination. And then, so they all gave some money to buy the firewood since the guy didn't have a cracker. So that the body could be burned. And I thought, what kind of people are these here in this city? They couldn't care less to save his life. Save his body, they didn't give a cent. And to save his soul, they're all chipping in to buy the firewood. It was a shock. A shock. But I never forgot. That's why now, after almost half a century, I'm telling you the same story again. It was not a story. It was not just something I saw and something I'm telling you to entertain you. It was a key event in my life. Because life has its key events. Life has its meaning. It's not just happening all like, you know, I don't know, it's just happening. There's something going on. No. There's a meaning. Nothing happens by chance. There is some planning. That element was there. So it was a forming experience for me at that time. And I got a real sense of eternity. End of part two. Part one, as you remember, was our foundation. our foundation in personal well-being, our foundation in quality. In part two, we have now established eternity. So it is the combination of these two which make a complete life. Not just here, but both dimensions. And then everything becomes magic and meaningful. And isn't it like that? I was with a group of people, also in a retreat. But this retreat was not in a hall. This retreat was on a boat. We had 64 people on a clipper, a sailing boat, three-master. It had two decks, cabins on the lower deck, nice cabins, showers, hot and cold water. Not bad. Little fridge in each room. It was nice. Then, on the second level, there was a big cabin, and that was our space for action. And we would sail from island to island, 3 hours, then stop on an island, 4 hours, next island. Just around Denmark in the summer. It was very nice. Weather was pleasant, gentle breezes, long waves are more peaceful. Short waves are choppy and intense on the stomach, but long waves are pleasant. And there, so my Dutch genes liked it because we are born sailors, you know. I smell ocean and water. I get excited. Yes, let's go. Boat, Yes, nice sailing. So I like that. Then we came to one island and I came down on the shore. Many people were looking at our boat and there was one man. He was also from Holland. And he said, I also have a big boat. I said, oh, you really do? He said, yeah, you want to have a look? I said, sure. We looked at it. It was an ocean sail, 30 meters long. Those are serious things, expensive, top dollar. Anyway, he invites me on board. And he asks me to sit down. And I sit down. He says, you want a drink? I'll have some water. Took a sip of my water, he poured himself some wine, drank the wine, and then says, with this ship, I was on the Atlantic. The sun was rising from the ocean. You cannot imagine the beauty of that light, reflecting on the water, reflecting in the sky. You could not imagine. He says, when I saw that, I was moved. I was deeply moved, he said. It was just amazing. Then he took a sip of his wine and said, and what went wrong in your life? That you had to create a god. And I said, ho. Wait a minute. Let's backpedal. Let's backpedal for a moment. Just minutes ago, you were on the Atlantic, almost on your knees. You were almost praying, brother. You were close. Why you give such aesthetic value to a few colors, some gases, some water, all these things? Why are you looking for so much meaning? Why do people write poetry? Because we need the meaning. We need meaning to life. When life has no meaning, Oh my gosh, it's dry and the blossom. Meaning to life. Yes, the soul. So, I mentioned the soul is dormant. I said, body. Yes, in harmony. Mind. Aligned. Soul, dormant. The soul wakes up in eternity. It's there where the soul wakes up. So that's the deepest element. So basically, with this talk, I've taken you on a walk through yoga, right? I've taken you I'm providing the background to yoga. And now we're going till about 9 o'clock, so I thought I'll talk for a while and then I'll end with singing some kirtan. I think you already had like a sample of Prahlad yesterday. Yeah. Prahlad's hard to beat. Prahlad's a natural. When Prahlad was a kid, Prahlad actually, his parents got into Hare Krishna, so he was born into this kind. He grew up with it, and he was when he was about 9 or 10. He sang this song. Mr. Gorbachev, set them free. Please release them, set them free. And it was about Hare Krishnas that were kept in Russia in labor camps and mental hospitals and God knows what. And Prahlad was an activist. And sang a song. You can check it out on YouTube. It's still there. You know? With Prahlad and Gorbachev and see what you get. And you'll get the song. He's good. It was a good song. Check it out. Yeah. It's nice. So, let us... Kirtan. Kirti. Kirti means glory. Kirtan means... glorification of all that is good, and by doing so, the goodness reaches within. Kirtan is now widespread. So many musicians have taken up kirtan. Some are famous, and Krishna does. In New York, there's a whole kirtan scene. Even in Sydney. So let's start with kirtan. Kirtan is an experience. One sings words and melody, and others they sing along. So you are invited to sing if you wish. The Ganges descends into the universe. It's sacred water. The devatas, the divine beings who live in higher regions, they have celestial kumbhas, or pots. And with these pots, they catch the river Ganges and that holy water, they bring it down. Why? Because Ganges is pure. And if Ganges is brought down, it's liquid mercy. they want to be part of distributing it because they know in that way they get the greatest benefit. Then Ganges comes to the middle planetary systems where we reside. Ganges there touches the land, touches the people. Some people know, take their baths in the holy rivers for purification and blessings. Kumbh Mela is still the biggest gathering of people on earth. All have come to bathe in the Ganges. Then Ganges descends still further to lower regions within the universe. And there, in the lower regions in the universe, Ganges is present and blesses, but nobody knows. Nobody knows the identity of the river. Kirtan is likewise the greatest benefit is in participation. just thought of a closing thing. And what I thought is, if you could all think for a moment about one positive thing that you found in this session, and share that with us. Because I felt that so far it was a lot of monologue, so a little sharing at the end, just before we go. Find one positive thing, and then whoever feels like sharing, shares. And meanwhile, it's my turn for some stretching. Because
listening to you.
Okay. Oh, one sec. That was a long sit. Yes.
Getting up and
dancing, eh? Hey! Yeah.
Your generosity of spirit.
Yeah.
Gosh. Yeah. It's delightful when we connect in consciousness. In Kirtan, when we just connect with that essence that goes beyond the word, that goes beyond the intellect, and we are just immersing ourselves in the ocean of that consciousness that the words in the Kirtan represent. It's just that it's part of Sangha that I think is.
Thank you very much.
Okay. You answered a question for me. The question that I've always had is, how do you find soul? And you said you find it in the temple.
Yeah, please.
I love the abandon that people have in this room because you don't usually get in normal life.
That seems powerful. Please.
You reminded me of how important the connection is to the soul.
Nice.
The opening of the heart like a lotus flower, and how it's just safe and secure, and to be free to open the heart and walk out into the world.
Yes, please.
When you said just share one thing, my mind went, oh, one thing.
And, then, not true,
and then it came to, but there is only one thing. There's one
thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
I think I love the way that someone who's dressed so holy and spiritual could be so easily accessible. Just the way you're telling stories and the way that would relate to.
Thank you.
And the musical accompaniment also was amazing.
The manual did good. And I forgot. Honestly speaking, I slipped. There was a slip up. I didn't introduce Gopinath. But I'll do it now at the end. He introduced himself by drumming. And Gopinath is actually, he's from East Bengal, which is the land of Kirtan. It's where Kirtan is taken to the ultimate. It's like you can look, you know, on the East Bengal these days is known as Bangladesh because they split it up. But if you look on the internet of Bangladesh, you'll see that the folk music of Bangladesh is Kirtan. That's what it is. So he's got it in the blood. And you can hear that the way he touches that drum. It's not like, you know, when he was very small, he sort of finally waited for the day he could reach the heads. And he never stopped since then. So, let's go to that.
I just want to say one thing. Maharaj is actually known for breaking harmonium in the sense of his kirtan is so ecstatic and he goes out of his limits. He doesn't even know how far he can go.
Okay.
So I was wondering if
I didn't do
mind.
That today. I didn't.
this is very special. He never does kirtan like this. He never. So this is very special to just for you all. So I was just wondering if you all want to request him to just have another 5 minutes like this. Actually, he's also known as, in his coin, he's known as...
No, I have to end in time, so yeah. I've been always like, speak about the time, because there's a schedule, please.
I found everything positive.
Huh?
I found everything. Everything
positive. Hermann Hesse.
Hermann Hesse.
Hermann Hesse. Okay, Hermann. Hermann Hesse. Yeah. Yeah. And it was Narcissus in Goldmund. Yes. We do have 5 minutes, Andrew. Is it
right? Okay, 5 minutes.
Huh? 5 minutes, eh? 5 minutes for real. I'm like at 5 minutes. Yeah.
You guys are lucky.
5 minutes. Special request. Okay, let's. What can I do in 5 minutes? From this experience, and Yes, it is very nice. I mean, yoga is a very essential part of life. It's not an add-on. Yoga is actually a way of life. It touches every aspect of life, and that's really what I wanted to say today. And I think you possibly already knew that, and some of you are deeply absorbed in yoga and making it a way of life. So I'm very happy that we could share our perspective on that same knowledge, which is so vast and broad, and that, yeah, together we could in that way conclude this wonderful retreat. And I hope that there will be many other opportunities like this, and looking forward to meeting you again. Thank you very much.
How can we find you?
A good question. If you have my name somewhere, is my name somewhere on a piece of paper? I'm on Facebook. Okay, that might do it. Or I have a website and a blog also. I have a KKS blog, and you can find me on the internet.
And you look up the Soul Directory.
And on YouTube, you'll find. If you type my name on YouTube, you'll find lots of kirtan. And it's not all mellow, because I used to be a rocker. And I behaved today. There is another side to me also that didn't come out today. Different setting. You'll find it on the internet. I'm famous for raga turns into rock. What to do? Thank you very much.